ways we use data is to determine whether a change we've made actually makes sense or actually made a difference. We're also looking at different effects of policies, of changes of vendors, of changes of components or designs. Basically, anytime we implement a change, whether it's expected to make an improvement or not, we're looking to see whether it's effective, whether the change actually is measurable and makes a difference, primarily for the customer, but also for our business. Now, many organizations have an ongoing continuous improvement process. And the basic idea of a continuous improvement process is that whatever parameter I'm interested in, say customer satisfaction or market share or feature set or performance of some sort, let's say it's reliability. We'll use a value that's of interest to us. I use RBAR, I think I've mentioned this before, is an abbreviation for reliability. And let's say we create our first product and it performs in some way. We learn a little bit, we create another product, it's a little better, and so on. We keep making incremental improvements as we learn things, and it makes a difference in the way the product is performing. Now, let's say that our competitor enters the market and they create a product that's nowhere near as reliable as ours, but they learn quicker. They make smaller, more appropriate steps, and they outpace us and start creating products that are more reliable than us. Now, those are two examples of continuous improvement type of a process. But let's say, on the other hand, that let's see if I've got another color here I can pull in. There it is. Let's say another competitor comes into the market at some point, and they start at a very high level, and then they start their continuous improvement. So this is what we mean by revolutionary, is that it's probably based on a completely different technology or approach to solving the problem. In market space, in product marketing, it's usually a new or novel way to solve the problem which the previous products did. And it may have a substantial improvement in performance or, in this case, reliability. So it's usually a mix of continuous and revolutionary type changes that we make to products. We're very comfortable with evolutionary or continuous improvements, where we make incremental small changes. Every now and then, though, it's worth stepping back and looking at what can dramatically improve the reliability of your product to get that significant step forward in the performance. Now, we have talked about special and common causes with statistical process control. And it's just a quick reminder, let's say this is my X-bar chart, and I have an upper and lower confidence interval. The common causes would be what causes it to vary within the bounds, primarily. And then on occasion, we would get a signal or a point that's outside the confidence intervals, or some trend, say two of my three are within that, in that outer band, and the other symptoms for doing that. Well, these red items are what we would typically call special causes, and those are unusual or indicators that something has changed. Whereas the green, the dashed lines I'm drawing in there, are really the source, the variability for them is caused by common causes. So if we're using a control chart type of approach to take a look at our process, and we're looking to see if there's a change, one way we can do that is, does the data stay in control? Or if running it changes, say the amount of variability, so that my control charts, the control limits, become tighter. That would be an effective way to measure if there's a change. Or another way is, did the process shift? And so as I'm running data and I'm collecting information, or running products and or creating products and collecting data, I may detect that my data was in here, I make a change, and then my data is up here. And that might be the direction we're looking for, but it gives us an indication that something has changed. And while we're making that change, we may not have changed it over at a particular point. We may have noticed out-of-control points as it settled into its new realm of where it operates. So a control chart is a way to detect changes, and it's a common way to do that. It's looking for that what initially will be special causes, and then over time it'll settle into a new location, a new plot. Typically, though, it takes us the same thing as setting the control limits initially. It takes 20 to 30 sets of data to understand where the new control limits should be. And so it does take a little bit of time. Whereas the special cause indicators, or the signals of auto control, give us an indication that something's changed. We just don't know whether it's a permanent change at that point or not. Another is just basically plotting. And so a common technique with using a Weibull plot is, if I'm plotting time on a cumulative distribution function plot, and this is 0.01, the probability of failure over time, cumulative probability of failure. And let's say this is my historical data. And I have field data from the past, and it's got a particular 90% confidence band that goes about it, and that's where my data has been running for some time. And we make some changes in the organization and change the product or change the process, and we expect it to be better. And so we introduce those to the field, and we get our first return at this point in time. And what we can say is that there's some indication here that since it's outside the confidence intervals and to the right, that it takes longer before we get the same percentile of failures. And so if we continue running and collecting data, it may create a new slope, and it also may just be parallel slope, but over to the right of the program. Now, on the other hand, if the new data that we're running ended up being very, very close to the old one, we could conclude that there was very little measurable change because of what we did to the program. So it's a simple way to use even a life data analysis to look for a change. Did it affect a difference? Now, we can also just do XY plots, of course, and measure all kinds of different things, and bar charts or stack bar charts or all kinds of different ways to do comparative plotting. My favorite by far is the box plot. And so if I have the traditional box plot for vendor A, and vendor B gives me something that looks like this. Now, because the two sets of inner groups here basically overlap, there's probably little evidence that they're actually different. But this one does seem to be less variability and lower. Now, that may or may not be significant for our particular process, but it gives us clues as to which direction to go. Now, I can conduct hypothesis tests, or I can get more data to see what the real difference is. But just plotting it can help us understand that is there any indication that there is some change or not. The caution, though, is that if these two box plots are based on 5 points of data each, they're really inaccurate at understanding where the true distribution actually lies. So think of these as little distribution curves, just represented in a different way. The more data I have, the more accurately I can predict where the actual distribution is. If I only have a couple of points, it's still going to be very inaccurate. So think of it as doing two histograms and trying to compare those. If you only have 3 or 4 points, it's really hard to draw any conclusions. If you have 300 or 400 points on each side, then you can probably detect some subtle differences. Another way, if you really do like tables of numbers, is to then scan through those and circle the items that are the high counts. And so it by looking at the tallies. It's very similar to the technique we would use for, say, a Pareto analysis and reorganize it into a box or bar charts, but also by looking at the individual sections. And so I might have a listing of different defect types or customer complaint type things, and maybe different customers or different regions as a matrix. Or you could vary this as to whatever is relevant for your particular product. But then by circling these, it gives them a little bit of awareness to the rest of the group. And you may be able to find patterns by certain types of defects may have a cluster within certain regions, for example, just in North America. And in this case, they're scattered a little bit. The bulk of my failures, though, seem to be occurring in the EU, but you could tally the numbers here and get a sense of which way we're getting the bulk of our failures. So there's a variety of techniques, even with basic tables, with a little creativity and using simple markers to indicate the high points or the low points, whatever is of interest. You can gain a lot of information that way. So with whatever experiment you're running or whatever changes you're trying to implement, we want to make sure that it doesn't make our products worse. We also do want to verify or prove that the product is actually in a better shape than it was before. So how are you doing that? What are the techniques you typically use? And are they sensitive enough to actually detect the changes that you're interested in finding? Next section, we'll take a look at failure analysis and correction, the last two segments of the body of knowledge.